This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Kia ora and welcome to Free Left Turner, Left Wing Perspective here on 89.0 Free FM. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Second or third frost, I think it's the third one in a row. Humdinger yesterday, I thought today's wasn't quite as bad.
My fingertips were cold this morning.
Yeah, I went out and fed my birds and all that. And by the end of it, I couldn't really feel to get my fingers into the seed bag.
Yeah.
But then it's been lovely weather though afterwards. Once the initial shock in the morning, it's been beautiful.
Yeah, well, it was over.
Big difference, no wind.
Yeah.
Yeah, no chill factor, eh?
Yeah. I was over in Whangarei Raglan on whatever day it was, and it was just stunning. You know, the harbour was still, and, you know, anywhere's lovely on a fine day, really, I guess. Yeah,
with that chilly wind. Yes, this week. We had that story about the person who died up at the hospital.
Yes, it sparked a
debate. Was it Waikato, was it?
Yeah, Waikato, yes, yeah.
It sparked a parliamentary debate.
Yes.
Thursday.
Yes.
Accusations flying backwards and forwards.
Yeah, that was an interesting one because what was promised?
A 28-bed unit, which is still in the design stage.
Yeah, Minister told Stuff a month ago that new hospital beds were on track. Now he says they're not.
So I was thinking, I read the article, I thought, is this the problem of lack of beds or lack of staff or both? And I think it's both, isn't it?
Both.
And there's also increasing population.
They do.
Demand up at the emergency department is crazy.
Well, I'm going to say, what's the greater Waikato? Everyone comes into this hospital.
Because of centralisation.
Bits and pieces, centralisation, et cetera. So if that population is growing by 10% a year or whatever it's grown by, have we kept up to play with 10% increase in staffing and beds?
It seems not.
Because it goes back to a percentage. It's like the justice system. You can have, point oh something, whatever, end up in the criminal justice system.
Well, it's a ratio thing, isn't it?
So if you had 100,000 people,
then you have X number of people.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, so you go from...
I feel sorry for the members of the public because apparently there were members of the public watching their attempts to
revive him
and the staff. It must impact on the staff.
Well, of course it does, you know. And no one wants it to happen. It's not a deliberate thing.
But
it's just falling through the cracks and things like that.
Is this part of the 6% budget cuts they introduced last year or the year before when they came in? No impact on frontline services, we were told?
No. But I like the way this whole heading was put together because you know how National's messaging on track? Get on track?
Oh, yeah. That's familiar.
That familiar word, yes. I think New Zealand First used the same sort of slogan, but I think it's not actually on track. But another thing that I found quite interesting, but it wasn't anything that I came across stuff. It was something I heard on the news about fast track in the roads of national insignificance. So there are about 15 to 17 roading projects. Under this fast track stuff. However, there's only enough money in the kitty to build one road.
Right. Okay, so how are they going to make up the shortfall?
I'll tell you which road that is. It's the 26-kilometre Arrow to Hono, or that's the Warkworth to Wellsford extension.
Oh,
at a cost of
Holiday Highway.
$2.2 billion.
Yeah.
But there's an extra to that.
Mm-hmm.
The Greater Auckland Advocacy Group, and they're for public transport and sort of urbanisation stuff,
yeah,
is saying the roads of national insignificance are of low economic value. So we come back to what you say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I thought the money would have been better value if there was made, probably spent on replacing tidal bridges in some of our rural areas.
Infrastructure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you got the South Wairarapa example, those bridges that were basically wrecked.
Yeah.
And but the mayor Fran for the South Waikato District Council, Fran Wild, says that these bridges are out of date.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're talking about new replacement.
Yeah, and that would be probably more of an economic value. Given it's rural, you get it. You've probably got dairy or mixture of probably dairy and other types of agriculture, and that's economic value, getting the stuff out. Without those bridges, you can't.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, let's face it. It's like any infrastructure in any country. It's, you know, they tend to have waves where they have a big infrastructure thing. After the Second World War was a classical example. In New Zealand as well as America and probably England and all that.
Oh, yeah, definitely in Europe.
Right? Yeah, definitely.
You had to, of course. But and it goes through. And then, of course, everyone just sort of sits on their laurels for a long time. And then suddenly it's like, hang on a minute, all our bridges are 70 years old, you know.
They've just been kicking us down the...
Down the road,
down the road.
Next generation can
kick in the can.
It's coming home to roost.
And we've urbanised. I think I don't think people get that.
Well, intensification of populations in certain areas. Say,
we were all sort of scattered, and we all in a lot of rural areas, etc. Off farms and etc. They've all got bigger, but the populations have ended up in the big towns and the cities in general. And, of course, the roads, et cetera, can't handle it. And the trucks, the old days of the farmer taking his cream can down to the local cannery, he'd be picked up and to the cream factory or the butter factory.
Mm.
Now there's tankers. So the bridges and the roads need to be stronger.
Yeah, that's to me, is economic value.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so if you want to look to see what these projects are, you just go to the Waka Kotahi site, and it tells you where they are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I kind of understand why they would say it was of low economic value.
So this particular stretch of road is going to cost $2.5 billion.
$2.2 billion was the costing apparently for that.
Yeah. Our roading, I think we talked about it. I haven't got the figures with me, but it's how much a kilometre our roads are. It's extraordinary, isn't it?
Well, isn't this the country where it costs $12 million for every kilometre of tunnel?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. We probably talked about it a few weeks ago, but yeah.
Well, it must be around about that, Mike, because I remember there was the idea they were going to put a cycleway between Grey Street and Hamilton East up towards university. It was like two blocks or something, and it was going to cost something like $24 million.
Oh, wow.
Jeez.
Yeah. This is insane.
Yeah.
And it wasn't Hamilton East on Wednesday because it was over at Silverdale Way, but there's a lot of roading type work going on down Clyde Street out by Mindfield Road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just wonder what the cost of all that is.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
And you can get it, but tell you what, the Mindfield Road, I took Mick down there, I think we went down after he finished the radio last week or whatever, and look. And, you know, it's a peanut, call it the peanut down there that sort of goes...
The roundabout.
The roundabout.
It's a peanut.
Peanut.
Yeah, it's a peanut roundabout.
Peanut bout.
So it was described as something else. I'm sure. I won't
a family show.
Yeah.
I think people can use their imagination.
But it's very well done. And Mick and I was impressed. I've been with you, Mick. But they had...
The thing I was impressed was it was low maintenance, because once they finished putting the whole thing in, it was low... There's no vegetation to be looked after.
There's a little bit of... Yeah. of fine
most
sort
of it looks like river stones or something like that.
Yeah, so it's like boulders, so you can't cut across it, and it's well thought out. And there's more and more of that happening.
Well, they're going to have to, because they've got all these green intersections, but they can't keep up with the maintenance.
Well, and with health and safety, with traffic, it's no longer sort of a sleepy town where you can just say, oh, well, we'll just weed the garden and the traffic will see us. They've got to have health and safety and road cones, road cones, you know. It's good to see that's the way they're heading forward, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, because we saw the one that goes onto Silver, you know, down Morrisville Road, and because I took the bus, it was a metro, so it went through all that roadworks and went down to that roundabout into Silverdale Road.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the first time I've been through that. Yeah,
that's good. Yeah,
it's quite well done that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it slows the traffic up. The idea is also to slow the traffic down and all that. So,
potentially, what you're talking about those with the river stones, where they should be using those is along Avalon Drive, because some of the buses are just drive straight through the. You got that circle, roundabout there. It's raised a bit, so they're just.
And they do seem to be changing. As they do stuff, they do seem to go, right, we'll get rid of that. We'll figure out the greenery's.
It's nice to have, but you can't keep up.
Yeah. And they've got a little patch, even that one down Mons for the peanut. It's got a little bit in, but it's confined, so it's not going to take over and all that. So, and they should be able to actually do that work in the middle of that peanut without actually having to stop the traffic, because it's away from the edges. If you know
I understand. And the other one down is Clyde Street, but I think that's more in lines with the water.
Okay.
So I was quite surprised. The amount of work that's been going on, particularly in Hamilton East, there's hardly anything in Hamilton West.
It's a big, when you think about how much money, and it provides jobs and everything else, but around the country, there's always something happening, isn't there? Yeah. You know, when you think about it, there's bridges going, or there's roads going somewhere or something else, and there should be arguments of how much it costs and its purpose, which I think there is. But, yeah, it's a... Hey, there's all plenty of people being employed in the roading industry, you know.
That's what they're saying.
You think they'd be targeting, if they're going to have a road building program, they'd be targeting ones that would benefit economically to the country. That,
not holiday highways.
Yeah, transferring goods and whatever.
Yeah.
Then you get onto the argument about rail.
Well, I'm a bit of a stuck story about this, but you know, the road between Hamilton and the Waikato over to Tauranga is, and you've got to go over the Kaimais, and that road gets chopped up all the time. The trucks on that road are just heaps of them. And I'm sure there was a bit of road tax paid and everything else,
but it doesn't come anywhere.
But would it come back to cover the cost of it? I'd like to know. I wonder who would know that. But
you'd think that the freight should be moved via rail, yeah.
Well, the Waikato's flat and the sea level's flat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if you get common sense, the Chinese would probably say, well, we can just put something through there.
Punch a tunnel through.
Punch another tunnel through, you know, and do it that way. Mm. You know, and let's phrase it, Auckland, Tauranga and Hamilton are the golden triangle. That's where all the people live. That's where most of the freight comes in from overseas. Mm-hmm. What we sell tends to go out this way as well. Common sense that this is the growth. These are the growth areas. An efficient rail system for both freight and passengers makes perfect sense. But huge investment.
So you could
you get it back. Yeah, you know.
So you could argue this government's all about cost cutting.
Yeah.
So why are they hand in hand with the trucking lobby?
Because exactly that.
Yeah.
Lobby.
So it's not cost cutting, is it?
And we don't have a trucking company that is owned by the state. Trucking companies are owned by individuals who do it for profit, et cetera, and they employ, et cetera. So there's arguments there. But, of course, Kiwi Rail is owned by the state.
Yes.
It doesn't have the lobbying power that, a bunch of wealthy, and some of these guys who run these trucking companies are very wealthy families.
We know that.
Yeah. So they have a lot of influence. You know, there's a lot of beach houses, a lot of lake houses.
So it's not cost effective, is it? Yeah. Really, when you think about it, if your trucks are running over the Kaimais and chewing it up, That's not
cost-effective for the trucking companies, it's not cost-effective for the state, the people.
Yeah, that's what
even if it means, okay, another tunnel and all this, and we do it right and it costs billions, once it's done, you can pay it off. It's like
you're not
borrowing just to pay wages. If you're borrowing for infrastructure to put another room on a house because you need to,
then that's
a feasible argument.
Mind you,
we had a feasible argument for the ferries and they decided, no, we'll just pay the trucking companies.
So it comes back to that wording I said before, low economic value.
Mm. Well, yeah, and lack of bipartisanship amongst our political parties.
Oh, that's right.
Where's our 50-year plan? Where's our 100-year plan?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The Chinese would probably even look at a bridge in the Cook Strait. You know, you never know how the. I don't know if it's feasible or not. But if they had two populations, they would join it.
Potentially, well, they've done that sort of thing, haven't they, overseas? Big long bridges over big, long areas of, you know, of sea.
Yeah.
Isn't the Severn one of those?
Mm. Yeah. There's also one in Croatia, too, that they built.
Yeah, that's right, to join up.
I went on it when I was over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm.
And it was completed before the due date, well ahead of its due date, and within budget.
I think the trouble of the Cook Strait, it is a tough strait.
Yeah.
You know, so there's wind and there's currents and, it's not like going over
an
estuary.
They punched a tunnel through the English Channel. That's dangerous water as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it can be done, but it's just...
It's a cost, eh? Yeah.
Well, and it's vision.
Mm.
Yeah. It's vision.
Because one of the projects they're looking at, under this fast track stuff, is the sort of a bypassing Brendewins.
Mm-hmm.
So... Yeah. Potentially, you could punch a hole under that if you had enough initiative.
There's all sorts of rationale, and
I know.
And so, where do you prioritize your money? And if you had a strong, how many billions are avoided in tax paying by people legally? You know, we've got that many holes in our taxation and stuff.
If you have
lots of tax coming in, you can do stuff.
Mm.
You know, having minimal tax might sound all right, but then everyone goes, oh, why's the road rough? Why we haven't got this? Why haven't we got that? Well, the two go hand in hand. You want more hospitals, someone's got to pay some tax.
Yes.
And it needs to be all of us because we all use it. Yeah.
Otherwise, we have these sorts of problems.
When it comes to roads, it seems to be that we're expected to pay for the roads, not them.
Yeah, them and us, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, them and us.
But surely there's that. It's the connection needs to be made between public services and taxation and the purpose for it, which I don't think we're very good at it, selling that.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's get back to vested interests.
Yeah,
that's what it is. Come back to the trucking lobby. Yeah, vested interest.
Yeah, and they're just doing what they do. Understandable, but it's up to the state to say, well, actually, this would be better for the country, the people of the country, to do it this way.
Well, given the state of the roads, I mean, they're constantly having to repair them. It must be nice if you're in a road construction company. Gravy train.
Because the public might pay the contractor to fix the road or build a road, but the public doesn't do it themselves. You know, I don't think we have a Ministry of Works anymore. We might have the Authority that keeps an eye on it all.
And we also have that info group.
Do we have a bunch of Ministry of Works trucks anymore?
No.
I don't know. Yeah,
no, I don't
know. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So what else you got? What else you got there, Mick?
Well, continuing in the vein of stupidity and venality, this is an article caught my eye. With more MPs claim full housing entitlement. Now, this is all stressed. It's all perfectly legal. The MPs outside of Wellington can claim expenses for accommodation. And guess who came in number one? Judith Collins at $612,967.
For how long? For what period of time?
Now, this is... let's see. Oh, damn it. They put it down here. I can't remember that last...
Okay.
Oh, hang on. A skyrocket... The accommodation allowance has skyrocketed in 2009... by 10% of eligible MPs claiming it, compared with 75% today. The rules are intended to help MPs from outside Wellington to cover the cost of working in the capital. It doesn't say a time period.
Okay.
Yes. Which is really annoying.
Which is annoying.
The bulk funding changes are between 2009 and 2014. Meant it was no longer against the rules for an MP to live in a Wellington property they own mortgage-free and claim the full accommodation allowance. She came in at $612,000.
Oh, she's a veteran truffer anyway.
Yeah, that's what I want to know, 612 over
what period
of time? Political term or over a year?
Yeah, that's what
I would say. It's over a political term.
Yeah, have to be over a term.
Yes, of a term of a government. Yeah.
Second came in was Louise Upson at 549,000.
Well, we know about she's got a...
Todd McClay came at 516,000. Labour's David Parker came in at $496,000.
But he's no longer an MP. So this must be over...
There must be over a term.
It's got to be. It's bad reporting, though. Yeah, that should be up front.
Conversely, there were 28 MPs who made a claim for allowances, but only a fraction. They had independent MP Tarkuta Ferris, who's one of 28 non-Wellington MPs, not to claim the full allowance of the last year. He says MPs should claim what is necessary to do the job, not maximise what is available to. And I agree with him wholeheartedly.
That's what that Thomas Coughlin was going on about. MPs being greedy.
Prime Minister Christian Luxon only used the accommodation allowance while living in the apartment he owned, landed him in hot water in 2024, and he repaid the amount. But it's just,
Well, it doesn't help our democratic process, does it?
Well, this further undermines any faith, if there's any left...
In the democratic process.
In the system. We're going to think, well, if they're going to do it, I might as well do it as well and rip the system off.
It erodes our public trust and our public confidence.
This is all perfectly legal.
Oh, it will be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was never designed for this largesse.
Well, what they're sort of forgetting is that a lot of these MPs are wealthy, so they can go along, I'm going to be an MP, I'll buy myself a house in Wellington, and they front up with a half mil or the two mil or whatever they need to do, and they say, but then I get my rent paid back for by the state, so my return on my money, I'll get the capital gain, and the state's paying me more than it actually costs, so... Hey, this is a great Tory type investment.
I think they mentioned $308 million. This is accommodation allowance in total.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But it was made to bulk fund accommodation allowances to MPs before MPs had to produce evidence of actual and reasonable expenses to claim these allowances. It's no longer the case.
That's bulk funding, isn't it?
Shame you have to prove they've got a justifiable reason.
So they're relying on everyone having ethics. Is that why they brought the system in?
Politicians and ethics don't tend to...
Well, some, but as we...
oxymoron, isn't it?
It's harmful for us on the left because this sort of largesse, whatever side the politicians are in on doing it...
People go,
they're all as bad as each other. I'm not going to vote. Stuff them. Who does that help?
Mm-hmm.
The same people who are doing this.
And they'll carry on milking
the
system.
And definitely. And what they did was Housing New Zealand or Kaiora tenants.
Mm.
It's just we'll just increase your.
They need to look at themselves before they look at.
Yeah.
But no, they don't.
They're too busy scrambling.
Yeah. I was trying to get that term number. You think they would have that?
That can't be been in 1 year, surely. Mm. There must be a total over a period of. The changes came in 2009.
So it must be over that period of time from there to now.
Yeah.
So they should have had it in such a way that it's like a graph to show you got your MP here. And some sort of year of service up here and whatever costs.
Here's a good example of what I was talking about. So Paul Goldsmith, the Minister of Justice, bought his apartment in Wellington in December 2023 for $325,000. And he claims the full Ministry of Accommodation allowance of $52,000 a year.
Yeah, yeah.
That means receiving 16% of the purchase price each year. He did not want to comment when approached. So Judith
Collins announced it must have been over a 10-year period and by those...
Oh, here, it actually does say it. Recently retired Senior Minister Judith Collins tops the list. She received more than $612,967 in accommodation allowances over the course of her long parliamentary career.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. But that's what I'm getting at. They've figured out you buy it, someone else is giving you an allowance.
We're subsidising.
And then he turns around and he'll sell that place for... $700,000 or whatever.
Will the taxpayer see any of that?
No capital gains.
It's a rort, but
never mind.
Yeah,
it's just.
Another rort, yeah.
Yeah.
What else here, mate?
Labour, this is a bit of a positive. Labour pledge boost for apprenticeships. They've begun to. It's promised to increase funding for apprenticeships if elected in November, extending subsidies for employers to take on apprentices because we need them. Currently, employers in certain industries can claim $500 a month for a year if they take on an apprentice. Labour, if elected, would extend the subsidy for a second year of training an apprentice, bringing the policy closer to the original scheme. Labour costed the scheme at $56.5 million a year on average, rising to $71.5 million when fully phased in. This works out as $226 million over the transitional four-year forecast period. Labour thinks that 27,000 apprentices will benefit from the scheme.
Up
from the 9,000 last year. I just hope that when these apprentices finish their qualification, they don't go overseas because they can't find work over here.
Yeah, that's the problem, though. They say there's plenty of work here.
Yeah,
But we
need apprentices. We need plumbers and chippies and electricians, all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So that may be on the cards. I don't know if it's a good one or not. National support. Oh, yeah. National claim that they support apprenticeship boost. In fact, this government has restored it after Labour failed to fund it. One of 21 unfunded programs left behind by Chris Hipkins.
They love sparring, don't they?
This is more spending that will have to be paid for through higher taxes or more borrowing and debt,
I hate them when they say they always talk about debt,
when it's criticising another political party.
Well, what about if everyone paid the fair share of tax?
But the argument always is around that our debt level is not that high compared to other OECD countries.
Yeah.
So I don't know why they bitch about it. Just get things done.
And to say that the taxation should be worked. This is what we need to run a society, a country, and have an equal opportunity and all that. This is what the intake we need to have our infrastructure. Our intake we need to make sure we have a skilled workforce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and surely that mathematics. And if there's not enough tax being garnered in, you go, right, we need some more tax. How do we do it?
Imagine
it
squeals.
Yeah, we have to be efficient with it. Don't get me wrong. And there's
of course.
But so we just talked about it before. Awful routing going on by some parliamentarians on both sides, etc.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that's what spoils it. But as a socialist, I want a very efficient government, but we provide lots of services.
Well, that doesn't seem to be the thread of their arguments these days.
It's to grow the economy.
Yeah. Them.
Yeah,
for them.
Yeah, but if Johnny at the bottom of the heap doesn't get to participate in the growth of an economy, then you get all these social problems.
Yes, we've always said that. That's always been the case.
You know, and then what are we going to do? Tale of two cities. You head off to your beach house on a subsidised highway, and you just blinker yourself to what's going on in other parts because the poor.
So the society they're talking about is them and their cronies.
Yeah. Seems to be, yeah.
You're not we the people.
Not the country as a whole, despite the rhetoric and the platitudes.
Yeah.
Which is also goes
back...
It's
going to get worse when it gets to November. It's going to be even worse. The platitudes and the rhetoric is going to get even worse.
Yeah. Well, and they get blasé and they go, well, actually, especially on the right, they go, well, the poor aren't going to vote in enough numbers so we can ignore them. So all we have to do is actually, all they're doing is really competing amongst themselves for the vote share of those that vote.
Yeah.
Never mind the 40% of the population that doesn't vote. They go whistle, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately.
Last year, it was the Labour Party's going to repeal the law introduced by the Coalition to bar courts from fining companies liable for climate change damage caused by greenhouse gas emissions.
Oh, yeah. We know what the current government's position on climate change is. We'll just ignore it.
Drill, baby, drill.
Yes, that's
who said that? The Minister of Largesse on spending government funds.
Yeah,
Shane Jones.
Yeah, he copied off that other fool, Trump. Yeah, drill, baby, drill. It's a catch cry of morons.
When I hear him say, I always imagine him as dressed as Nero, fiddling while the place but goes up in flames.
Well,
it's me. A bit sporadic this week on my part. But
So
you've got some stuff there, Fred?
Yeah, what do you got, Craig?
All I could talk about was the fast track and the roads of national insignificance, which I thought was a good one because it brings into play what you were saying about vanity projects. In the Tale of Two Cities analogy.
Yeah.
That comes into that too. Yeah. Where these roads are only for
certain people.
To get to the members
of the country club.
Yeah, basically, because when they talk to, when that article was raised on the news, these people from Wellsford, I think, well, they're very happy with it. But what about other people?
Yeah, they're pretty popular, and they'll increase military spending. Someone's telling me that we've sent more troops over to overseas to Ukraine or something.
Or training, or advise.
Military contractors.
Yes.
Or military advisors.
So
they find the money for that.
Were we ever asked who was the bad guys and who the good guys there, or did we just do it because we did it?
Because the media tell us.
Yeah. Well, and they're telling us because they... influenced by others.
So we know that Putin's done a bit of bombing of civilian sites
Ukraine has bombed
refineries as well.
But see, isn't it? Go back on. We'll just talk about that a little bit. It's quite interesting because you know with the Western Asia, the Middle East crises and all that, and the illegal war and the unfair war of Israel and America and Iran, of course, and then there's been damage to oil and infrastructure, etc. But what they're not talking about is the damage to oil infrastructure in Russia and in Ukraine. Because Russia is a big producer of oil. So the West is going on about Iran's not fair that Iran is blowing up oil infrastructure, etc. in the Middle East.
Are we claiming foul play?
No, we're not saying anything because what's actually Russia's a supplier of oil, so we're deciding to we'll try and hammer the hell out of their oil supply installations, and they say, it's to hurt Russia, but it actually hurts the rest of the world as well because you've got the two major areas that supply oil,
and then the oil companies will put the price up.
That doesn't get talked about. So we're not saying what the hell are we doing blowing up oil. Anyone blowing up oil installations, anyone having a war for that matter, but it's just interesting that the focus is on bad Iran and bad Russia and no one's talking about, why are we blowing up infrastructure that we can get some benefit of? The pipeline that the Ukrainians blew up or the Americans or the... Someone blew it up.
In the North Sea.
That was an own goal. Who did that hurt? It hurt Europeans.
Yeah, it's dumb.
You know, Russia supplied cheap oil. The whole thing's dumb because dumb. And who wins out of it? Probably a few wealthy families that have shareholders.
A few of the elite.
Who have the shares in all these big places that are still running. So, I just thought that's bemusing that they're all going on about that and yet we were attacking Russia's oil installations. It's dumb policy, you know.
It's been dumb and dumber, really. Well, that's what happened when they attacked those oil facilities in Iran. How dumb is that?
Yeah.
And they're still bickering about who's agreeing to what, the MOU. And the Iranians are sticking to the MOU. you, and it's the Americans who are trying to move the goalposts.
Well, is it the Americans or is it the Israeli masters?
Well, both of them.
Probably. What you said, Fred.
It seems to be America's definitely, for some reason, is kowtowing to Israel. Whether it's the evangelical base that's causing it or what, or just straight out money, who knows? But definitely America seems to have to run to Israel every time it wants to make a decision. And if they don't like it, it goes back to the table, you know?
A few commentators have made that remark, that America's definitely lost its prestige and influence.
Well, I think they always thought that they still see that. Oh, you know, we're Israel's big brother sort of thing. Well, I think the Israelis actually are the big brother or have the influence over them. The tail wagging the dog comes to mind.
Well, and that just flatters Trump, and Trump will do anything that he wants.
So he told
him, well, you can do what he did in Venezuela, and you can knock out Iran in 2 weeks, and he's gone, and that's what he did. And he's achieved absolutely nothing.
He's made a little right fool. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
But he's made any factions in Iran that might have sought the downfall of the government turn around and coalesced around the government.
It's
been counterproductive.
Those fools who wanted the Shah back, well, they made a rod for their own backs because they're sided up to the Israelis.
Yeah. Well, they don't really want the Shah, but they want their land and wealth back that Iran from, like other countries in Latin America.
They probably want the Savak back as well.
So, we had the Prime Minister visiting us in Hamilton on Thursday night.
And how was them, Chris?
He was good. I actually saw him. I went there a little bit early with my little Free Palestine sign because I thought they often arrive early to have a little either dinner or a cocktail or whatever the tourists have, or nibbles or whatever, or a pre-little sort of thing.
Did he scuttle into the building?
No, he saw me though. I see him looking at me, and I was just on my own in a
cold night.
It was a curious look, you know.
Was he wearing a woolen hat?
No, he was in his suit, and you always tell when a government car's because the drivers are always in a suit and tie. I was trying to tell the others that arrived. I said, look out for BMWs that have a driver wearing a suit and tie. You know,
I know the type.
Yeah. But anyway. So that was good. We gave a good reminder, but there were lots of people who went in. Politics, you know, Winston Peters got a lot of people and the Prime Minister's drew a big crowd, which was a cold night, so that's interesting.
What was it an aid of?
Oh, I think it was just public meeting, you know, early.
Was our representative from Hamilton East there?
Yeah, of course. I think he was hosting it. You know, Bad Boys High and all that.
Yes, and you got plenty to say about him too.
Yeah, but the response of people going in was basically pretty neutral. The odd, and this is my advice to National Party voters, if you were going to go and call us lowlives and other names, which I won't mention on air, don't be wearing a National Party jacket while you're doing it. It's sort of not a good look for your party.
Yeah,
we
could take a screenshot of you and put it on Facebook or somewhere.
Yeah, so I just thought, well, that's a bit dumb, you know. But so he was there, so that happened. And the other thing that on the Palestine thing is on... must have been Wednesday. I don't know. You might have heard of Hahuna Ormsby.
Oh, yeah.
He was one of the activists on the flotilla that was going from to try and get into Gaza with aid and to do a publicity thing on the situation. Well, anyway, he spoke on very emotionally and it was very powerful. He spoke at in Raglan on Wednesday night and to a full house. And he spoke for over a couple of hours, but it was spellbinding, but awful. The brutal treatment by the Israeli military was just disgusting. Yeah. There was almost no control. And I think it was about what they're trying to do. If they just put them on the plane and they go again, then they want to come next year. I think there was so much in trying to intimidate these people and get the news out that we can we'll be violent to disencourage another group trying to come in. It seems to be that they've basically got a free hand to do what they like. And there's been complaints of sexual assaults and Hahona himself, he got beaten and he got smacked, spat on, you know, what do you call plastic ties on your arms, too tight and everything else. He's still got injuries on his hands, and this didn't just happen to him.
It happened to others.
But Hahona's got a full tāmoko on his face and all that. He may have been, you know, there's a lot of racism, unfortunately, in them. And amongst the Israelis.
Didn't he say that old Gevier showed up there as well and making piggy noises?
And he what's his name? Ben Gevier.
Yeah.
He was so busy showing off to his own support base that he took videos that he then released. But he was just, they're out of control. He said it was just hard to fathom they could be so awful. Yeah. So he was really spellbinding to bounding to listen to, but it was awful, and there was some dreadful stuff went on.
And Peter, because I think he talked about it earlier on, Mr. Ormsby.
Yeah.
And Peters didn't believe it.
No, that
didn't happen. No,
there was no evidence.
No evidence of that.
Well, and of course, it's hard to get evidence when you. But the physical evidence, you know, and it wasn't just about Hahona. There were others who were off the planes and they had bruises on their faces. And where did that come from? Tripping up the gangway, you know,
Mr. Peters turned a convenient blind eye.
Like he usually has on this whole issue.
Yeah. New Zealand First seems to be got to decide whether it's New Zealand First or Israel First, it seems.
That's a good name, Kate.
They've been disappointing.
They've
should change the name to the NZFI.
Yeah.
New Zealand for Israel.
Yeah. They've
selected Nauru, a known Zionist, as a candidate.
Alfred Ngaru, who's the other guy from down Whanganui? He's just talking about his name coming up. He was the mayor down there, had a bit of problem with race.
Laws.
Yeah, Michael, they're talking about Michael Laws.
Is he still around?
Yeah.
Unfortunately. He's on the platform, apparently.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, and he's talking about being there's rumours that he'll stand for New Zealand First, so whether that happens. But anyway, folk, you know, what Hahona and others went through has just been...
I think some are still being held, aren't they?
I think they've all been released now, but they certainly roughed them up to try and intimidate others from coming again. You know?
Oh, this is... they'll paint themselves into a corner, basically, Israel.
But of course, he said what he said with a surprise that the first interception was done in international waters, not far from Crete.
Yeah,
and he thought, and they all thought, oh, the international world will go, will speak out in one voice.
It was
reported, but there was very few countries who said this is outrageous.
I think Spain was one.
Yeah.
But that was
Spain, Norway, I think, and Ireland would have been the ones that would have complained. Yeah.
The rest were jellyfish, weren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's...
Like this country.
There's a hold going on by... I don't know what it is. I don't want to go there or anything else. But you would like to think New Zealand have... as an independent nation, would go, well, this is right. It should be about right or wrong.
I don't think we're an independent nation anymore.
Well, it doesn't seem to be.
No, we're spineless.
But, it was very well worth to go and listen to him. Hopefully we'll get him over to Hamilton at some stage.
Where was he speaking?
There's the old school and right in the centre of Raglan.
Is that what he's doing? Okay.
It was only a small room, but it was filled to the gunnels. I don't know how he went through it. You know, and he'll have nightmares about some of the stuff he went through, and he said he did, you know.
Seeing Ben Gevier's face,
And he said, right, Ben Gevier, he thought it was, and he's only said he thought, because it's all recollection stuff, but he thought Ben Gevier spat on him, but he got punched at the same time by a soldier, so he wasn't, you know, the recollection was, did that happen or not?
But
he wasn't sure enough to say he'd spat on me, but he just...
But Gevier was there.
Yeah, so, and being
cruel. Was that the same as where Netanyahu told Ben Gavir to, you should,
you've done harm to our image, yeah.
Not because he did the wrong thing, he was worried about the image.
Don't film it.
The image.
Yeah, it wasn't.
That's all he was worried about, was the image.
Yeah, it was just him trying to cover it a bit, but, yeah.
But the cat's out of the bag anyway.
Mm. So, yeah. Oh,
yes.
He did something,
So that's the bit on what's going on. That's the two things are on the Palestine front.
Going back to that, did you go to that event in Raglan, Fred?
Yeah. I stayed in the Raglan Hotel, actually. I thought, I don't like driving at night much, and I thought, I'll treat myself a stay. So I stayed in the old pub. It was very nice. Big old building, you know, so that was good. And there was a heater, thank goodness, so it wasn't too bad. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So I've got a couple more. Shall I go?
Go for it.
Yep. Peru. Peru's just had their presidential elections.
Yeah. Fujimori.
Yeah. So Keiko.
The daughter of.
Who was President Alberto Fujimori, who ruled with an iron fist from 1990 to 2000.
Done eventually for corruption and human rights, was it?
Yeah, I think so.
But that's the right. So anyway, Keiko is his daughter and represents the right wing. But the election result were
very close.
50.1% to 49.8%.
That's close, isn't it?
So it's very tight, you know. 40 or 50,000 votes was the difference.
50. Did they say what the percentage of the voter turnout or voting?
It didn't. I tried to look at it. They said there were 18 million voters, but I didn't know
whether they all.
That was in the article.
Right.
So Robert Sanchez was the left wing candidate.
Right.
But so it was very close. But what was interesting, the things that made my ears prick up was there was a big overseas vote.
Okay.
That was heavily swayed in favour of the right wing.
Yeah, it'd be privileged Peruvians overseas, yeah.
And why I brought that up is that what happens, you know, in a lot of places, the privileged are living somewhere else, but they're
having votes.
They have sticking their nose in back to where they're from, you know.
Yeah. So what percentage did Sanchez get?
49.8.
That's
and something. It's 50.1 something and 49.8.
Yeah, so Robert Sanchez.
Very close. Yeah.
It wasn't the only close election, was it? It was Colombia.
Colombia was close a few weeks back, yeah, and that was the same thing. But the real thing from the right has won the last few elections in Latin America.
So it's back to business as usual. Right wing governments in South America doing business with overseas interests and
suitcases of money
and to hell with the population.
Well, that seems to be. Let's hope not. But are we going back to right wing juntas where they?
Ironic, but Nicaragua, you've got Daniel Ortega.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's just as bad as some of these right-wing governments in other places.
Yeah. It's their whole political system.
It's just,
So anyway, but Trump's supporting these people and they getting in, which is really interesting.
It's called interference, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, but why influence is so heavy? And they do a law, typical right wing. It's always law and order. We'll just build more prisons to keep the peasants involved.
We'll do things to encourage business and growth.
Yeah,
blah blah blah. Same old mantra.
Same old.
We'll have our proxies.
Yeah,
doing our bidding.
Yeah.
We've got them here. I'm sure someone's bidding.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Theo will make sure of that.
Now the other, and I've got a positive actually.
All right.
What also I did this week, I took a friend over to the zoo. Hadn't been to the zoo. Well, Hamilton, right in Hamilton, and of course it's a real showpiece for our city. You know, it's well organised. You're in a zoo, but there's lots of space.
Mm-hmm.
And they've just bought, it's 25 hectares.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got the largest bird aviary for the native birds, et cetera, in the country.
Yep.
I'm a bit of a two-way person with zoos, is that, I don't like them, but what the zoo does very well...
Oh, like breeding programs?
Yeah, there's breeding programs, but they also put up, this is species is endangered, etc., from land loss and all that.
So hence that these are like oases for some of these
species. Yeah, and a promotion to say, well, actually, the reason why they're here, you can't see them in the wild anymore because they've been used for bushmeat or whatever, loss of habitat.
Been degraded,
so it's very well done. I was impressed. And there's not
been that way. I remember it used to be a long, long time ago. It must be 50 years.
We can catch the number three bus.
It used to be a pheasant farm out there.
Yeah, okay. And that's now part of the zoo.
Yeah. It was council owned and something.
It was private, then the council bought it.
Yeah. And it had a small zoo at the time.
Yeah.
It had a few big cats and maybe some primates.
Yeah.
But it's expanded because they've got bison there too, haven't they?
There were rhinos there. Lots of rhinos.
There were rhinos everywhere. There was a real clutch.
Had some bison last time. Yeah. They've got these open paddocks for these animals to run around in.
Yeah.
And so not enclosed as such.
Yeah, very cleverly done. I was impressed. And the staff were friendly. And
it is an asset.
Yeah, and next door to it is the Waiwhakareke Reserve, which is now in the process of building a predator-proof fence around it.
Mm.
And I thought, oh, this is going to cost a bit. But they've got a lot of donations from big charity,
Well
Trust and trusts and bank trusts and all that. So once it's up, the idea of that... They call the whole the zoo and the Waiwhakareke, they call it the Karoro Nature Precinct. So they'll blend into each other a bit.
Yeah.
So that'll take a bit of the pressure off the Hamilton Gardens, et cetera.
Horseshoe Lake is the
But it's well, if you can go and wander there through now, but they say they need the predator-proof fence because it's in the town and there's always cats and rats and everything.
Yeah.
So they're bitten the bullet.
It'll be a target if it didn't make it predator-proof.
So down the track, we might be long gone, but as the manuka and all that they've planted, there's the planting other stuff that's more mature, what they call canopy trees, will come through.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is to show people the, to be good for nature, but also to show people peat lakes and then the swamps and then the natural swamps and then bush and Kahikatea forest. But it's well worth a look even now. But the fence looks like it's quite a few of the poles are in. So, it must hopefully they'll finish it this year. They finish it this year or the next year.
Because they have to dig down, don't they, get the fencing in.
About 2 metres tall. Tall, so then you've got to be in the ground as well.
Because it's burrowing
that goes down in the ground as well, doesn't it?
I'm not sure how that will work. There's different sorts of whether they need it. Could you think to stop predators digging out?
We'll get underneath.
Rats definitely will dig that.
And they have to do that in places where there's mammals that they've got to try and stop getting out. But I know. I was extremely impressed.
Reasonable admission rate.
Pensioners was $20 for the zoo.
That's not bad.
Yeah, and a coffee and a cake. Coffee and a cake for two of us was $20.
Oh yeah.
We had lunch, and my lunch was a lovely lunch, and it was only $20-something. A little bit more, 20 whatever.
Good little time out. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I say it. Yeah, in the city, and you want to get there from, and you don't drive the number three bus.
Dimsdale.
Hamilton West. Or you can, if you're right for walking, you could catch the Meteor West from where we are over our side, and it would take you to the Waiwhakareke beside the fence there. I don't know what road is.
It eventually gets
you down to the base. You could hop off there, and it's probably a 400-500 yard walk from the bus stop up to the zoo. Doable for it. Yeah. Fit old guys like us.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my positive.
Yeah, I remember the battles that they had getting that reserve done, because I know that there was big desires to build there, particularly by one council at the time or one.
And there was some subdivisions really close, but they've managed to go, we need to do this. So the subdivision, I imagine, would be quite sought after, because now there's a fence there, they will look. They'll have a natural boundary rather than more housing, I guess. So,
mm-hmm. Yes. That stifled Gary Mallett, I know that.
Yeah, and I've got two more. Yep. Oh, three more. A negative for New Zealand. The bird flu is expected to strike anytime soon. The strain H5NI is an Aussie now, and they said it'll be an inevitable with bird migrations that will come this way.
Yeah, yeah.
Any impact on humans?
There can be, but there's impact. They said that there was an impact on, it was quite tragic, on not sea elephants or seals or in the Antarctic last year or the year before.
Okay.
They got caught in it. So it can cross into, and that's why they always worry about it.
Yeah, cross
but it's also for us where we've got some very endangered species.
Has our government made any response to this?
Well, there's not a lot you can do, but what the zoo in Auckland has done, they've got a flamingo population.
Yeah.
They've actually changing its, they've taken them out of public viewing and they're putting a fine mesh over their existing mesh. Mm. So the sparrows, because how it will work is if a blackbird or a sparrow gets in, often they can to feed it. They can spread it.
Of course, the other problem is like chicken poultry farms.
That's what they were fearing, yeah.
Because didn't they have a massive cull in the United States?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they say 90 to 100% total.
But you can, and they said for really, I didn't look up enough of it, but it did say that for really highly endangered stuff, they were considering or were going to vaccinate.
Right.
There's obviously a vaccination for
that's going to be
it.
Interesting. How do you
the ones in the wild, but the ones that
the
are
ones
in
even
confined.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, let's fingers crossed, but you know.
Yeah, that and probably iron reserves, I'd say.
That will cost too, won't it?
Well, they may have to go, right, we're not just having any people go for these nature reserves if it gets too rampant to try and slow it up,
Well, I just mean like the cost of the vaccine itself.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that'd be, yeah.
That'd be cheap, I'd say.
Mm. Mm. What else you got there?
And the other two things, how much time we got?
Five.
Oh, 5 minutes. Mm. So I see Andy Burnham. Mm-hmm. Basically, no one's challenging him for be the new Prime Minister of Britain.
Why Animal would want the job, I don't know.
But anyway,
I hope he does a good job because the Brits over there are desperate. This chaos to stop.
Well, and I'm glad you said that because they're basically saying he's got a new face. He's going to be given quite a lot of largesse because he's not a farmer.
Honeymoon period.
Yeah, well, and they'll say he'll get a honeymoon period regardless.
I just hope people's patience lasts because they're desperate.
Yeah. So basically, he's got quite a big honeymoon period coming because it all basically.
Are there any visible contenders for the job?
No, so that's what I mean. If no one contends, he
could just walk in.
Basically.
Sounds like a poison chalice, eh?
Yeah,
Brave man.
He is, but it's got to be better than Starmer.
Anything's got to be better.
But it doesn't sound like he's going to be radically different. So,
Well, he's got that sort of pro-Zionist leanings, isn't he?
Well, not. That's a bit naughty from the media because he also was. He's a typical politician. I think he's had his foot in both doors. Friends of Palestine, friends of Israel sort of thing. So we'll watch the space.
If it works, I'm all for it. If you can tread a neutral path and try and promote...
Well, let's hope he doesn't say it's okay to starve women and children like the other fella implied.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or confuse the word hostage with sausage.
Yeah, that's awesome. A good look. And finally, America... 250 years independence.
Well, their time, our time tomorrow, ahead of them.
Yeah.
He's going to be insufferable.
Yeah. But isn't it interesting? Here is a country that's formed, forget the fact there's an indigenous people there before, etc. So they're celebrating basically when they bet the British.
We got over it a long time ago.
Never mind the genocide on the indigenous people. Never mind the slavery.
Before and after. Never mind
the hedge.
And they're still promoting America as the ideal democracy and values and principles.
Exactly. And now, they've never mind the hegemonic behaviour of America around the world. Never mind, they've just recently supported the latest genocide.
I can see my computer's going to be switched off quite a bit in the next 24 hours because it's going to be vomit inducing.
Yeah.
They'd be all trying to outdo each other. Who can be so patriotic.
Well, American, they call it exceptionalism, we call it narcissism.
Or
tasteless. Oh, you're just a failed democracy.
Or tasteless.
Yeah, so anyway, so...
250 years.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, is that how long was it? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I can meet you for 76, I was back in a year. They did the 200, they were in the 200.
Okay.
1976.
6 years, yeah, 200.
Yeah.
And that was bad enough.
Yeah. Well, they got the football, so that's distracting everyone. And
Well, let's hope they don't win that game. Yeah.
Or it'd be even worse.
Oh, yeah.
If they win as well, we won't hear the end of it.
Yeah. God damn those Americans.
God loves
America.
Yeah. Okay. On that note, we're out of here. Catch us on our podcast and on freefm.org.nz.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.